Hello and welcome to the Manage Self, Lead Others podcast, mainly for experienced and aspiring people managers. I'm your host, Nina Sunday, and this is the show to help you explore ways to become the best version of yourself at work as a manager. Each episode, you'll hear from some of the brightest minds on the planet who share your passion to elevate and transform team culture. They'll share insights in self-leadership and leading others. Together we can make workplace culture better. Are you ready? Because it's time to manage self and lead others. Thanks for tuning into this episode of Manage Self, Lead Others podcast. I'm your host, Nina Sunday, and we have a world expert in pricing, known as the Price Whisperer. Per Schoeffers is a thought leader in everything pricing and how companies can use pricing to drive higher growth, sales volume, and increased profitability. It was out of his frustration with what business schools teach about pricing, the fact that it was too abstract, too academic, too hard for a business executive to act on, Per set out to make pricing practical and actionable. Per Schoeffers has a deep understanding of how the four P's of marketing, place, price, product and promotion, how the four P's interact and what affects price. I'm looking forward to this deep dive into pricing. Welcome, Per Schoeffers. Welcome, Per. It's really exciting to be talking to you today about a topic that, from my experience, even in my own business, but also working with in other businesses, that people just assume price. They don't really take a scientific approach to it. And I believe you've got a scientific approach to setting prices. So please tell us about that.
Yeah, most companies most companies don't really understand the importance of price. And because of that, they don't spend enough resource doing it. And what does that mean? Well, it means that they may be looking at a competitor, or they may be simply guessing what the best price would be. Or many manufacturers use cost plus pricing, meaning that they carefully calculate the cost and then they add some kind of industry margin on top of that cost. Now, all of these methods is a guarantee to leave money on the table. And leaving money on the table is not a good idea.
Now we need to maximize our profits. And I've worked with sales teams. I've worked with my own salespeople, and they're so quick to discount. And what they don't realize is that anytime you discount, it's actually 100% of that discount comes off profit.
Correct.
That's something salespeople don't understand, and sometimes sales managers as well, because they're focusing on, let's get the figures up. You know, it's gross profit margin that really is important. Isn't that right?
There's a sort of a saying or a proverb here saying that nobody cares whether your company is profitable or not, but if your market share drops with 0.5%, heads will roll. Which is crazy.
Yes. So the people are looking at the wrong statistic. They're measuring the wrong thing.
And you go to negotiation. Salespeople go to negotiation training, and that is about how to discount. But there's another interesting statistic. So when we just talk about that, purchase managers typically go on negotiation training every 6 months. Salespeople go on sales training maybe every 10 years. Guess who got the upper hand?
Training themselves by reading up on their profession. So it's funny how sales. It's my favorite comment is that salespeople need to consider their career as a profession. Therefore, continuing professional development is so important.
Yeah. Oh, it's important. Yeah. I mean, it's important in all aspects of a company, of course, but it's particularly important when for those who actually create the lifeblood of every company. which is sales.
Yeah.
And that is so funny. I'm mentoring startups, among other things I do. And one of the things, and one of the most frustrating things I hear sometimes is the startups who's in the mode of, no, we just need to refine that feature. Oh, we just need another, you know, we just need to fix our website. Or no, I think our logo needs to change. No, you need to go out and sell.
Yes. Yes, a lot of people think marketing will do everything, but you've got to have a sales process as well. You're absolutely right. And here's the thing, getting back to profitability in sales. If salespeople understood or were encouraged to understand the gross profit margin of different products and were rewarded for selling the more profitable product, that would be a better way to approach things. Would that be right?
Mm-hmm. There's a there's some interesting statistics here, and I'm going to lean on two different studies, one that is done by McKinsey, the large consulting firm, and the other by A.T. Kearney, a slightly smaller large consulting firm. And in both cases, what they did, one of them looked at the S&P 500 and the other the Fortune 2000s. And what they did was that they at the end of the day, profits in a company comes from only three variables.
Yeah.
It's your total cost, it is your total sales, and it's whatever price you sell that at. And so they looked at all these companies that could be said to be an average American company. And they found they found the same answers, meaning that and they, I call this the 1% challenge. And they looked at how, if we change one of these three variables, the cost, the sales volume, and the price with 1%, what will happen to profitability? Well, it was found that if you can reduce your cost with 1%, profitability goes up with 3.5%. If you can increase your sales with 1%, profitability goes up on the average 4.5%. But if you can increase your price with 1% or reduce your discount with 1%, profitability goes up with 11.3%.
Now that is an interesting statistic. And just to give myself confidence, some years ago I used to have a chart behind my desk that it was some marketing expert had printed that said, you know, increase your prices by 10%, increase experience a 30% increase in profit, increase it by 50%, and so on. It went up, so it made, because sometimes sales or companies set their prices with an element of fear. It's like, if we increase the prices, we'll chase all our customers away. Yeah. Maybe they'll just chase the wrong customers away.
Yeah, that's right. Well, that's very, I mean, two things here that you spur my thinking. First off, I've actually made a calculator. So if you're in a company, you put in your cost, you put in your revenue, and then you put in the amount of price increase you are going to do, 1%, 5%, whatever. And as a result, you see how much your profitability is going to go up. A story here about how price affects your customers.
Tell us a story.
Yeah, we did this for a fairly small company here in the Los Angeles area that sold a phone system in the cloud, a business phone system in the cloud. And we said that you guys are so underpriced that you can quadruple your price. All right, which they did. And the result of that was two things. First off, their sales volume increased with 25% at four times the prices. Right. Secondly, to use the very technical term the CEO used, he said, and then we got rid of the bottom feeders. And we got a completely different set of customers. So he said, our support costs have gone down with 80%.
In other words, the problematic, troublesome customers that took up all your time, which eats up your profitability, they went away.
Yeah.
And then you had the high profit, low maintenance customers that stayed. Oh, that's wonderful.
But you know, this is because when you have these really low prices, in many cases, you only, well, I say you, but the company appeals to price sensitive customers, and price sensitive customers buy from the company only because of the low price. They're not all that interested in the product or service, so they don't even spend or invest the time needed to learn how to use it.
You're absolutely right. They don't appreciate if you go the extra mile. They're not appreciating that difference. They just assume, you know,
that's correct.
Yeah. So price optimization is a topic or a theme that should be on any manager's list of where to focus. Is that right?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And it is on the minds of people, but we actually did a study on this, and I know other people have done similar studies. And going back to those three variables and how it affects profitability, we've done a study of American CEOs, where we simply asked the question, which of these three variables affects profitability the most? And 12% said price.
Right.
88% said the wrong answer.
What was the wrong answer?
Well, the wrong answer was what affects price the most. They said, well, sales volume. Profitability the most. And they said sales volume or cost cutting.
Yes, because I think people think that if they drop the price, they'll get more volume, therefore they'll get more profit. But that's a false thinking, isn't it?
Yeah, and setting different prices is something. I mean, every company spends oodle of resource for cost control and sales and marketing, and then they spend almost no resource on pricing.
And I think about this a lot, Per, because if I've ever gone for volume and dropped the price, I mean, mm-hmm. I've been in business 20 years, so I've experimented myself, not perhaps as scientifically as you. I've noticed that we've worked twice as hard for half the income.
I have similar experience.
And I'm over that.
Yeah. we're currently working with a company who's selling supplements. And I mean, this is one of many customers we have, but this company is selling supplements, and they say, the problem we have is that the raw material is in our supplement is expensive. And then they said, we have been told that we should take our cost and we should take that times 5, and that's going to be our price. But that's too expensive.
Right.
So then the whole point in for us to be involved is to understand this is a unique product. What customers are really willing to pay those relatively high prices? What is the profile of customers that will pay the price that is 5 times the cost of the product? What marketing messages appeal to these people? What channels do they want to learn about the product? How do they want to buy the product? Do they want to buy it one-off, or do they want to buy subscription? Do they want to buy it brick and mortar? Do they want to buy it from the company's own website or from Amazon? All this. So it's because the company has this bug in their head that it has to be five times cost, which is okay. But then
someone gave them that formula once, did they?
Yes. Exactly. So then the question is, how do you defend that? How do you find the market niche that are willing to pay five times the cost? And how do you market to that customer category so that they're willing to pay five times the cost? What specific features, functions, and benefits leads to the pricing power of this company so they can charge five times the cost?
It's all about product differentiation and communicating that unique selling proposition
exactly
to the potential customer.
Few companies realize that it's actually profit that fuels the company.
They forget, don't they?
Yeah, they do.
Forget, yes.
So then that's why they focus on sales volume. And you mentioned that salespeople should be compensated on profitability, not on revenue.
And some industries are. I had one salesperson join our company. And she had a conversation with me about what's the gross profit margin of this product versus that profit. I went, gee, I'm not used to having that sort of conversation with my salesperson. But she'd come from a recruitment firm where that was really ingrained. And I really thanked her for that. That was marvelous.
That's great.
Changed our approach after that. So I guess what really is the biggest mistake that companies make when setting prices? It's like you said, it doesn't feel like the right price, or like that's like intuition, or they're comparing themselves to other products, but maybe they're not realizing how unique they are. And that's the story they should be telling the market.
I mean, customers come to, or companies come to me, and they say things like, we haven't dared to change our prices for 7 years. And I'm convinced, they say, that if we just increase our prices with 2%, we're going to lose the entire business. You know? Oh. So maybe the biggest mistake is that companies in general are so afraid of pricing, so afraid of increasing prices that they almost suicidal in their approach to pricing, you know?
It sounds like they're driven by fear.
Yeah, exactly.
That's no way to run a company.
That is no way to run a company. Now, obviously, there are outliers. There are some companies that are very good and on pricing in general and on the process in the company. But the biggest mistake is having that fear of pricing and not realizing that pricing, in fact, is a profitability driver. And it's not unusual at all, like the story I mentioned with the telephone company in the cloud. It's not unusual at all to increase prices and see an increase in sales.
Yeah, that's so counterintuitive, isn't it? And what a lovely story. So we should take heart with that. And of course, any company you work with, you encourage their confidence that, because you use a process called predictive demand analysis.
Yes.
Sounds very scientific. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, let me just tell you a little bit about my background before, because it comes from that. And I had a chance to run a couple of companies in Europe before I moved here to Los Angeles, and then been running a couple of companies here in the States too. And we did experiments with pricing. And some of those experiments were very successful, type next quarter revenues are up with 25%. And others were complete disasters. What I had learned in business school and can read about pricing was so academic that it was completely useless in terms of us understanding why some of these experiments worked and others didn't. So 14 years ago, when I decided I was too old and too opinionated to work within a reporting structure, I decided to take that interest in pricing and develop a process that would make every pricing experiment a success. And that process consists of, and this is where we get into the predicted sales assessment. The it consists of a particular kind of market research, online market research, where we can predict sales volume and revenue at different price levels. And then we take that predictions and we split it, we segment it. So we segment it by different customer profiles, for example. So we can tell our client, this is the customer profile you should focus on because it will lead to the highest revenue.
They call that the sweet spot.
Yeah.
So you've got to focus on the sweet spot.
That's right. And then we take that further and we say, these are the marketing messages that leads to the highest revenue. These are the product or service features that leads to the highest revenue. These are the sales channels that leads to the highest revenue.
So you actually have a holistic approach.
Yes.
Not absolutely. Just about what price will people buy, but you actually give advice on the specific messages to appeal to the demographic that's going to be willing to pay that price.
Yes.
Well, it sounds like you earn your keep when you work with people.
Well, you know, I have to tell you this. We've done maybe half a dozen projects in Australia. So.
Oh, that's interesting. Very interesting. Yeah. So
some of the more well-known brands over there.
So you work with people all around the world, Europe, Australia, USA.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. Mm. And that's also interesting. We did a project a couple of, maybe 2 months ago for a Scottish-based company, company based in Scotland. And they were selling its product in the UK and here in the US. Well, they were launching a new product, I should say. And for this particular product, we found that the feature of the product that drove the highest revenue in the UK was lightweight, whereas lightweight was not important at all in the US. And then we realized why. And that is because this is a product that you bring with you when you travel. And in the UK, that travel would typically be on public transport, which is why weight is very important.
Oh.
Whereas travel here in the US, you put this device in your trunk and nobody cares about the weight because you only carry it for maybe not more than 100 meters, you know?
Well, that's a cultural difference between those two geographies. And that's very interesting to discover that. And of course, how are you doing that? Through focus groups, surveys?
Online surveys. When I started the company then 14 years ago, I didn't know anything about market research. So we do it completely different because I didn't know what you're not supposed to do.
Well, that helps because then you innovate.
So and of course we developed our own artificial intelligence software to analyze the data that we capture in these surveys. So
now one of the things that you've written about is price anchoring, mm-hmm. and also ending the price with an odd number like a 9 or a 7, as opposed to rounding it off. And I think there's a point at which lower priced items might work that way, but there's when you're working in the premium pricing area, that works against you. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, the price anchoring works actually in all price levels though. Right. And that has to do with how we as humans react to numbers. When we see multiple numbers, the first number we see becomes an anchor for the second number and so forth. And that means, for example, that if you do a website where you have multiple product offerings as sort of a good, better, best, you should actually start with to the left having the most expensive offer, because that would make the offers that are sort of to the right appear more affordable.
Yes, so there should always be, yes, I've heard this, there should always be three offerings. You expect that they might go with the middle one, but always have a high priced one that's presented first.
Yes, always first. Now, there, when we talk about websites, there are other things you should, if you can, sometimes if you can, you should remove the dollar sign or make it as small as you can.
Well, I know to remove the comma.
Yeah, you should remove the comma as well.
And also don't add the .00 at the end. Correct. Get rid of that. Remove the dollar sign. I hadn't thought of that.
Because then it's a number, it's not money.
Oh, that is fantastic. I'm going to do that from now on.
or make the dollar sign as small as you can, because there may be regulatory requirements to have a dollar sign, you know?
Uh-huh.
So
what other little tips like that in terms of
and you should also make sure that when people are reading the description, and then you after that you have your prices and so forth, and add some big number, used by 350 million people. That's another big number, makes the prices
another big number there. Makes the price seem less. Oh, that is such a good little
and I'll tell you the most brilliant way of price anchoring I have seen was when Apple came out with the Apple Watch, because the regular Apple Watch was $349 here in the US, and then they had a version for $17,000, and it was exactly the same watch. With one exception, that the case was made of gold.
The case was made of gold.
Oh. And did they sell many of those? No, I don't think so. But what happened was that every journalist who wrote this, and of course, any potential buyer of an Apple Watch, wrote these reviews and stuff like that. But all the journalists wrote about the audacity to have a $17,000 product, which is identical to a 349. And that 349, every time you read about it, got less and less expensive, more and more affordable.
Right. And you can do it verbally too. I remember when we had public courses for speed reading, we'd say, well, it's $995, but if you want the early bird, it's only $795.
Yeah, so exactly.
It sounds less by comparison, yeah.
Now, it's but going to another thing here then, note that it's 17,000, not 16,999.
That's an interesting point. So
because product or services where you want to use price to message quality, uniqueness, and so forth should not end on the 9. Or a 7. They should end on even numbers.
I promise I will start testing that that method, and I will report back to you, Pierre.
I can assure you it's going to work.
Thank you. I think that's been a really good point to end our conversation today. But before we go, is there any one final piece of advice you want to share with our listeners?
Well, we talked about many different things here, but I think maybe the most important thing is don't be afraid of price increases.
And some companies stay too long with the old price and don't acclimatize their customers to regular price rises.
Yeah, exactly. This is something you should always do. Every 6 months, every year, you should increase your prices with a little bit, 3%, 5%. Nobody's going to care. Nobody's going to notice. But after a while, this is going to make huge impact on your profitability.
That's right. Well, Pierre, how can people find you, and do you have any sort of a blog or newsletter that people can subscribe to?
Well, I do. I'm actually just last week got a publisher for my book. So that's going to be distributed by Simon & Schuster in probably February next year.
Are you allowed to tell us the title, or is it top secret?
We don't know the title just yet.
But I do know they call you the price whisperer.
I am the price. I'm supposed to be. And this is not something I invented, to be honest. I was just, people called me the price whisperer so many times that I decided, hey, why not? Why don't I just adopt it?
Exactly.
But the best way to find me, of course, is the website, showforce.com. Weird name, makes perfect sense if you're Swedish like me. So it's SJOFORS.com.
And it'll be in the show notes so they can read about it. Yeah.
And there's a page there with lots of links to articles and interviews and blog posts and so forth.
They go to the Thought Leadership page, and there's a wealth of information there. And I really thank you, Per, because what you're doing is unique, and you're actually focusing on an area that people just assume, have all these assumptions about, and you're actually stirring the pot and saying, hey, hang on, there's actually other ways to look at this, and you're educating the market. So fantastic. Well done. Well, fantastic work you're doing.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you for having me on the show, Nina. And I hope this was useful and also a little entertaining.
Oh, it was both. Thank you so much, Per. Lovely to talk with you today. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Nina.
Today, we've been speaking with Per Schoeffers on the Manage Self, Lead Others podcast. He can be reached at schoeffers.com. You can find the link in the show notes. I'm your host, Nina Sunday. Remember to subscribe and listen to Manage Self, Lead Others wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time, ciao for now.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.